Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm just going to leave that going. It's a good way to start the day. We're here at the Hot Stove Society. It's our weekly endeavor to produce information about food and dining that is interesting to all of you listening. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
Owner of several restaurants in Seattle.
Yes, right here in downtown. And I'm happy to be alive today. I turned 60 a couple weeks ago, and I've been partying a little bit about it and writing little bad jokes about it. And
have you?
Yeah.
That's how you've been spending your first couple of weeks of 60?
Yeah, you know, it's like you might as well be dead.
Wow.
That is wow. Bleak view on the situation.
There's no going up from here. No. Yes, I do have several restaurants.
And I'm Terry Rocher. I'm very much younger than Tom, so nothing to worry about here.
Mm-hmm.
At least 1 year. I'm owner of Luc in Madison Valley and Lule downtown Seattle.
That's right. And I'm Katie O. I'm your co-host.
Our co-host.
That's right.
Sometimes it's the co-host with the most. And Katie O, we say she's the co-host with some.
Some. Sometimes I've got a little bit of something.
That's an old joke I've used for a long time. And never was funny when I first started using it.
But, you know, keep workshopping it.
You just did 60. Everything is funny.
For 2 hours, I listened to the show last week on the 5 o'clock hour on Sunday. It was very good. And we did kill you in the Food for Thought trivia. Tasty
I know.
Trivia.
It was pretty brutal. That's why I'm not going to play this week.
Okay, good. Kind of liked when you played and lost. We're going to discuss what's trending in the foodie world. That would be our world. Answer your questions on crab recipes. Terry can make
Can't
fun
wait.
Of my crab cakes, omelets, and more. We're going to share our favorite taste of the week and then finish the show after two spectacular hours with Food for Thought tasty trivia.
That's right.
It's always fun around here. And we always then move into ordinary to extraordinary.
That's right. Video. This is where you take some ordinary dishes and you make them extraordinary. And as we've been known to do, we take the national food holidays and then we put our own little twist on it. So the first one on our list today is National Banana Split Day on the 25th. You don't see a lot of banana splits these days.
You don't see it much anymore, no.
That's right.
That's
for
good reason. It's like gluttony. It's like people are trying to lose weight and then they eat a banana split.
Well.
Is it good for you because it has a banana in it?
Mr. Negative, I feel like we could say that just about anything. We could say that about hamburgers. We could say that about hot dogs.
I mean, so that you can make a banana split with a half banana, not a whole banana. I mean, you could make it half the size.
Well, then it's a half a banana.
Or how about a whole banana and like a little mini scoops of
ice cream?
You
know, it's called a banana split.
We can think this through. Come on, make it extraordinary,
right.
Tom. Don't be a poo.
What? Fresh whipped cream. Fresh vanilla whipped cream would be my first request because I've seen it many times.
On top of ice cream, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because.
What sense does that make? I just think a banana split has seen its day. That I don't know that.
What?
Yeah,
what's
I think
the matter
that
with you? Look around your own hot stove society. You have a whole section of sprinkles that are so adorable.
Exactly.
And cute. I just would prefer like a hot chocolate or a hot caramel sundae. Anymore.
Okay.
I don't
well,
need
I'm just
whole.
I'm just saying to you.
At my age, I'm just going to say, at my age now, you don't want to buy green bananas.
This is going to come up every day.
You're on one today.
It's like you just don't. At this age, you don't buy green bananas. You don't buy unripe avocados because you never know.
You don't ever know. You don't ever know.
Yeah.
But I bet we have some tips on how to
Matter
ripen
of fact,
that banana faster.
I got to say this. You know, I turned 60, and for years I've been getting these things from the American Association of Retired People, and it's like, dude, I'm only like 55, and they keep getting these things about high housing and insurance and, you know, all these things about life and, you know, take care of blah, blah, blah. Now, you know what they sent me? Discount cremation coupons.
I'm hearing a lot of it's true.
I don't
true
even have to pay
you.
For the cremation.
Many people approve, and they look like they're about 35 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you care?
So ice cream sundae, banana split, who cares? A dish that large, I don't even have time left to eat it.
I feel like this whole show
Tom,
is going to go down this path.
I got
path.
An idea. How about if we cut it down into smaller and put it in a little coupe? And, you know, one banana split fits six people.
Okay, I like it.
Okay. How about a pot de crème? Is that okay? Can
sure.
we talk
yeah.
about that?
All right. Chocolate pot de crème. Yeah. Oh, we make one at Luc.
How do you make it special?
We make it special because we don't overbake it. And I think it's the biggest mistake that people make with pot de crème. Or for many flan, crème caramel, or any of these dishes. I think the problem is people overbake those items, so they become very spongy, and they don't have any more flavor left in it. And when you put your spoon through it, it's really heavy coating as opposed to be totally smooth and runny. I mean, have you, you've had the chocolate pudding at Luc?
I have not.
Oh, you should try it. It's a small, it would be right up your size for a 60 plus, because it's like small size. You know, it's perfect.
You can go in nice and early for dinner around 5 o'clock.
Do I get a senior discount?
You get a senior discount, plus it comes with a cookie, because I think this kind of dish...
Cookie.
This kind of dish should have a little anise cookie with it, because, first of all, it's nice to be able to take a little bit of that flan pudding and put it right on top of the cookie and eat the cookie with it.
If you keep saying cookie like that, I'm going to, like, freak out and go get one.
Am I saying cookie differently than you
are? Who can resist a cookie?
I can't. I love the idea of a textural difference
there. I think you're a little cookie myself.
Yeah.
No, my.
Get it?
I do.
Okay.
This is what happens when you get, you know.
Okay, how about a cherry turnover, Tom? Do you want to take that one? National Cherry Turnover Day on the 28th.
I know, which is odd, because cherry season's long gone.
Yeah.
And there's lots of blueberries and figs out there. So I'm going to make mine extraordinary by actually using a fruit in the season.
Okay, sure.
And we're going to make a fig jam.
Yeah.
Beautiful figs out right now.
Yeah, but we're going to take orange peel, and we're going to put it into a sauté pan, and then put it over heat, and we're going to let it sit there and sizzle until it actually burns, because I love the flavor of kind of burnt orange peel, and that's what I'm going to sliver up and put in my fig jam, and then in a delicious pot brisé, which, for those of you who don't speak French, that's pie dough. And then it's funny how some terms translate in certain languages, right?
Yeah. I mean... You know, not everybody needs to say pot brisé in order to get a pie dough.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so then I'm going to make a little hand pie out of it, and we're going to then drop the mic.
Boom. Drop the mic. I like that.
Okay.
Wow. Well, on that note, what's up next?
We have just enough time for a cocktail for Whiskey Sour Day on the 25th.
How do you make a whiskey sour?
Here's how I would do it.
Better, yeah.
I would get rid of all the cocktail mix, the sour part,
and just
have whiskey on the rocks.
That sounds about right for you.
And buy a decent whiskey.
What's your whiskey choice?
The latest one I've had that was I thought was delicious is called Coppersmith.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up getting paired with them at the big distillery event in Fremont.
It's a local
a
brand,
month ago,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And or Copperworks, maybe
Copperworks.
Yes. Yeah. And it was delicious. Disgusting. It's a unique flavor. What does organic mean anyway? On Cairo Radio, coming right up on 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show, and apparently we've been invaded by angels. I'm so excited. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
The angel.
The angel.
Told me herself.
Self-proclaimed. Actually, I think Tina brought it up, and then I just kind of kindly agreed. Let's talk organic.
Mm-hmm.
We read an article in the New York Times recently about organic restaurants not actually having all organic food. And I know that we've talked about this somewhat on the show, but I think it's worth repeating now that the story's kind of come up about Pat LaFrieda and his Bear Burger Bar, which is what this article is really taking on. You can look it up online at thenewyorktimes.com. But really, the question to you, chefs, is how do you quality control your organic food for your restaurants? And is it something that you are thinking about? I know, Tom, you've thought about this because there was a time when it was a bit of a, how should I say, do we prioritize organic? Do we prioritize sustainable? Do we prioritize local?
Mm-hmm.
And really kind of taking a hard look at our food systems.
Well, let's talk about that first, Terry.
Yeah.
If you are presented with the ultimate goal, I think, for all of us would be 100% organic. If you're presented with the idea that you can buy local dairy that's sustainable, let's just say they have a grass-fed local dairy or something like that, or you can buy organic, but it's shipped in from Colorado on freight trucks, what's your choice of what to do?
I will always,
not, you know, the local is not certified, is what I'm going
to
say.
So for me, I will always go back to local and seasonal first.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been...
Even if they're putting fertilizer on it.
It doesn't matter if they're organic or not. To me... Well, no. I want them to be clean.
Okay.
I'm not going to buy them because they're local. I'm going to buy them because they're clean,
okay.
Number one. And then two, local and seasonal will come before organic. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes.
The certification of organic is an expensive matter for a lot of farmers.
And it can take years.
And it's a very hard matter to take in hand. So because of that, many of them give up, especially the small artisan. You know, they just give up. They're like, I don't need to be organic. I just sell my goods at the farmer's market. But they're clean 100%. They obviously love their job and their planet, their animals much more than, you know, some of the bigger companies. Mm-hmm. So... that, but local and seasonal is definitely my focus for sure.
For me, local is a trump card. I would say we don't do enough research, even on the local. We take many, we take many farmers at their word.
Right.
And we certainly take produce wholesalers at their word that they've done the research, so that when they're selling me green beans that are organic for $1 or $2 more a pound than green beans that aren't organic, but they're from California, how do we really know? So you have to have that certification throughout the system, and it has to come on those boxes when you get the produce. I'm sure there's some scamming going on. Like, we had this whole issue in New York City, right, where they went to 12 fish markets and bought wild salmon at 12 fish markets. Then they did the DNA testing, and 11 of those fish markets were selling farm salmon as wild salmon.
Right, right.
So, I mean, we have the responsibility as humans to kind of follow our food chain back to the source. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that just the word organic has drastically changed since it started.
Mm-hmm.
It started with during the hippie time of people wanted to do clean food from clean earth, and then it's moved on to a description of what organic is, which I believe if you drug the heck out of a piece of land, put a fence around it, don't touch it for 3 years, you've got organic.
That's not necessarily the case. So, like, for example, our farm in Prosser, it is not organic, but we use organic principles.
Right.
Because just the overspray from the valley floats through the air, and you would never get certified there.
Right.
There's orchards all over us. There's cattle, dairy farms. There's all sorts of reasons why. They spray for mosquitoes in the ponds, the Byron Ponds, just to the west of us. Every year they spray for mosquitoes because of West Nile and that sort of thing. You know, so it is very difficult to be organic in a certified way, and expensive, and takes a long time. I think I want to say 7 years or so. So going back to the original question, to me, I think of local first, and then if they're local, I want to do the research to know how they're farming their land, how they're catching or raising the mussels over in Penn Cove.
The smaller they are, the easier it will be to have the conversation. It's very simple to go straightforward and go, do you use any chemical in your farm? Do you use any kind of product to, you know, get rid of anything?
Well, I understand, but that's not necessarily, that doesn't preclude organic. There's many certified chemicals that you can use in organic farming. It's not as clean. Organic is not as clean as you think it is.
No. And exactly. So I'm not looking for organic. I'm asking first a question to my farmer, do you spray anything on your apples? Mm-hmm. And if he says, oh yeah, I spray DTT, I'm like, okay, so I won't buy your apple, you know. And if he says, no, we don't spray anything, we actually work with, you know, nature, and whatever's good is what we pick up, then I buy the apples.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it will be a few bucks more, as it should be, because there's a danger of not getting the whole crop.
But if his box, if his farm doesn't say certified, you don't know if he's just blowing smoke or not.
Yeah, which
you're
is kind of interesting about the certification, right? Like, yes, it's stringent in a way that might be sometimes a little bit arbitrary, but at the same time, it was put in place to essentially protect the consumer in so much as that the farm should reach certain standards and qualifications. But that, again, if you visit your local farmer's market, say in your neighborhood, you might be able to find a farm out there that is actually using all those practices but cannot pay the money to get that certification. Mm-hmm. So it's back to your point, Tom. I think it really is a little bit about doing your own research when it comes to what it is that you're eating. Where I think it is interesting in a conversation that I have amongst my peers is when do you buy organic and when do you not, and when do you care and when do you not care?
Mm-hmm.
I will personally say that I feel like a little bit of a hypocrite sometimes because I will go out of my way to stock my personal fridge and pantry with organic items and farm-raised things that I know where it comes from. But then again, I will go to any old restaurant and eat whatever. So, you know, it's and not really ask those questions quite as stringently. Like, I'm going to go to the ID, for example. They don't list any of where their ingredients come from, but that doesn't exactly stop me from enjoying that food. So... as chefs, in your own personal lives, when do you make the choices there too?
Let's go back to one thing that you said. When was the last time you ate at Maria's restaurant, Tilth? That's just, I think, the only certified organic
right.
restaurant in the city.
It's been a long time,
right?
And
Maria
that's
Hines.
Right.
So it obviously isn't the driver for most people, I
right.
would say, is making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
In the grocery store or in our restaurants, I will say that we try to buy organic, and depending on if it's seasonal, it's probably more likely. But, for example, I don't buy organic lemons over regular lemons. In areas that really make us not competitive in the marketplace.
Right.
Right? I would much rather have health insurance for my team than buy all organic produce for the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find one is more sustainable than the other, right?
I was going to say, yeah, sustainability is a lot of things
right.
other than just the food system.
I think that's what comes
into it. It would cost us in our restaurant group probably $2 million, maybe more, a year to go all organic, and it would increase the prices on the menus by 15 or 20%, I would say, about the same as healthcare for the team.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, you have to make some decisions when you're in a business, and you have to make the business decision, right? So you had any thoughts?
No, I'm 100% with you. Some things are just a little bit behind our control. I mean, you have to remember, you live in a city, and you're running a restaurant. So those two things are actually a little bit counter to, you know, have everything all around 100% organic all year round. But, you know, I'm with you. Lemon, you know, is not something that we focus on 100% mainly because we can't get it locally. So, you know, once we can get it locally, well, we're at the mercy of what's going on the market in some ways. And, you know, citrus and all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Coming up next, what trends have popped up in the food world this year? We're going to go through and decide if we love them or hate them on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. People are very lively because they haven't had their breakfast sandwich yet. They're not sated. A couple other thoughts about turning 60.
Don't ever let it go.
Yeah. I started working out with a trainer, as you know. I was getting about a year and a half ago, so that because I knew 60 was on the horizon. And I thought, God, I don't want to lose my golf swing. I want to start stretching. Here's what I realized. You know, a lot of people, when they have terminal disease, like obesity, they go to the doctor and get a pill, and the doctor kills them, basically, right? They give you the death pill. That's what it's like hiring a personal trainer. It's like assisted suicide.
What are you talking about?
No, when you're working out, and they're just standing there staring at you, kind of giving you that grin like, oh, I'm going to kick your butt today. And it's like assisted suicide. Trainers, personal trainers.
But look at you keep going.
They should change the title.
You are a glutton for punishment, then. You must like it.
Well, I'm just
saying.
You've
been going for a while.
Yeah, he must love it.
Here's the other thing. I call my mom to wish her happy birthday, because we have birthdays close by. She says, because I was struggling with 60, she said, don't worry, just tell people you're 70, then they'll think you look young for your age.
Now that's smart. That's a wise
mom. You look awesome for 70, Douglas.
So spry.
Yeah. Okay, enough about that.
Are we ready? Are we ready to move on to restaurant
We're back
trends?
In the Seattle kitchen on Cairo Radio. What's trending in the restaurant world?
So many things, probably.
Other than old chefs.
Yeah.
Are trending right now.
Always trending is our classic.
You know,
classic
when I
chef.
Was 35 years old, this Junior League of Women Voters, I think it's Junior League, is that women's
yeah.
voters? Junior League, whatever. They called me and they wanted to give me their Godfather of Northwest Cuisine Award. I was 35 years old. Nobody's calling me now that I'm 60.
Why do you think that
is? Because if you were the godfather at 35, you're probably dead now.
Exactly my point.
They've just taken you off of their
register. Okay, what's trending in the restaurant world?
Yes, let's talk about what's trending in the restaurant world and get your take on it, because you have so many years in the industry. Let's see if some of these...
Thank you for that,
yeah, no problem. Mm-hmm. Strike you as new and interesting, or if you're like, sure, they come and go. Let's see. So we went to Bon Appetit magazine, and they picked out their trends of 2018. The first one is uni is universal, I think is how they want me to say that, but universal. And it's popping up on all the menus. I've always been a fan, but
I love uni as
you
well.
You love it. Mm-hmm.
I've done it for many, many, many years, especially when it's in season here locally.
Uni is, of course, the sea urchin roe. It's right. Creamy. It's kind of that orange marigold color. Traditionally, you used to see it only really at sushi restaurants, but now it is in a lot of dishes and a lot of different cuisines.
I was at Providence 2 days ago in Los Angeles, and I had dinner there. And guess what? I had their special item. You know how I do scrambled egg and caviar?
Mm-hmm.
They do a scrambled egg with uni, strangely enough. And we're talking about this. And that was delicious.
Delicious.
This is one of those areas where if you have nothing nice to say, you shouldn't say anything at all.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, you don't really love this particular...
Now you want me to say something?
Yeah,
I was trying to be nice. I don't get it. It just tastes like... Ugh. I don't know. It's just never been a thing for me. Uni.
It's umami of the ocean. That's
what
I think.
One thing if it was just a texture thing, because then I can easily get over the texture thing. Mm-hmm. But the flavor is just...
It's like an egg yolk to me, but from the ocean.
I was going to say, it has kind of a custardy type of texture, mm-hmm. but it does have a strong flavor in the sense that it's very buttery, but it's buttery of the sea. So
right.
if, you know...
So I guess the point of the article was, these are trending, and all of a sudden, like avocado toast, you see uni on
kind
all
of
these different things, mm-hmm. and frankly, I'm just going to skip.
Okay, you're going to skip. Let's go.
You're going to go straight up.
I bet there's a lot of people that agree with me. Uni is a little bit like the cottage cheese of the sea.
No, uni is one of those things that you love or you hate.
I hate. Thank you.
You hate.
I'm a hater.
Terry and I love it. Okay. It's called the shingle, and it's our plating of the year, is what Bon Appetit says. This is when everyone pulls out their very fancy mandolin, doesn't scrape their little fingertips on that sharp, sharp blade, and gets something like a radish or a potato, and they... make little tiny shingles and essentially dress your plate with it. Thoughts on this? Thoughts on this trend?
next.
Are you just going to say next to all these trends?
No, I think
it can be done well.
This is a food writer trying to think of something to write about.
Right.
All right.
It's okay. It's okay to have dissenting opinions.
It is true. It is okay to have dissenting opinions. The next one is a new way to hire, and this one is organizations and restaurants dedicated to hiring folks with what would typically be seen as barriers to employment, like refugee status, a criminal record, or a history of addiction or homelessness, are popping up across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that. What do you think?
Let's talk about you and me. I think Chef and I are in the same boat on this one. Frankly, I pick up the person's wrist. I would pick them up by the arm, and I just touch their wrist to see if there's a pulse, and then we say, yes, you are hired.
Is that all it takes?
You're breathing? You're breathing? You're standing? You're coming?
You know, honestly, we have this beautiful place where we do our show, the Hot Stove Society, mm-hmm. and we have started to train our own young cooks because there's just not enough people that are trained at this point. So we have line cooking class here where some of our lead chefs teach youngsters how to cook. And it's interesting to me when you look at the different talent levels of our cooks in the company,
mm-hmm.
and not just talent level, but also experience level. So point being, like, if you've been at Sirius Pie and you're working the peel and the wood oven, you don't necessarily know how to break down a chicken.
Right. Make a stock or whatever.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a shock to me when I found that out about our young cooks.
Well, it is one. It's funny you mentioned that because it's been my overall view of what's happening in the cooking world nowadays. I think then cooks are specialized per station, not by overall cooking.
Uh-huh.
And it is exactly that. It's you can have somebody who can make a killer salad but can't debone the French rack or whatever.
Somebody who can make, you know, Sirius Pie's been called one of the best pizzas in America.
Right.
But you don't know how to bone out a chicken.
Right.
It's just never occurred to me until I had these youngsters in this room and talking about things like that. So, yes, we are looking for dedicated, passionate people anywhere they happen to show up.
That's right. And they're great.
Because someone is homeless doesn't make them a bad worker.
That's right. And there are great, great organizations like Fair Start, for example, that do exactly just that. They bring people back into a larger community, which is the food world. And that's a wonderful thing, in my opinion.
And as a company, we always try to think, we do plenty of work, and I know you do too, Chef, of handing out.
Right.
But oftentimes, people need a hand up. Mm-hmm. And so that's where jobs come in. And, you know, we have an HR department that works on finding people places to live.
Yeah.
I mean, we work, this is serious.
You have to be, you just have to put more dedication to helping these people. You know, if they need more help than someone else, you just have to put more focus on it and, you know, give them a hand and, you know, make them successful at what they're doing. So,
all right, the next one, Big Meat is back, baby. And so they are looking at a few restaurants across the country in these large format servings of meat. Major Domo down in L.A., Cote over in New York. You know, this is kind of interesting. For so long, we saw a meatless Monday trend, which is not to say that it is gone. I think some people still really adopt that into their lives. But this focus back again on this carnivorous sort of activity and this plentiful look of a huge, huge piece of meat. What do we think about it?
Well, I think sometimes it gets confused. So, for example, the tomahawk steak is super popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's very few, and I shouldn't say this, I don't run a steakhouse, but there's, I would guess, very few people eating the entire tomahawk steak. I think it's gorgeous to see that steak come out to the table, get sliced up, and then everyone shares it from the middle, and you buy a bunch of the sides that go with it, the potatoes and the veggies. And you can do this at the butcher's table, right? So you get some delicious sides, you get the big steak for the center of the table, and you kind of split it up. And I like that presentation.
Yeah.
It's like a mini roast.
Splitting is the word there. You have to share it amongst everybody at the table, not be like...
But eating a 24-ounce steak was never good for you, and oddly, probably still isn't good for you. but that's somebody's choice.
Yeah, take only your personal dose of meat. Maybe
we only
not
have a
everyone's.
Minute left.
All right, last one is one that I haven't seen, but I want to see, which is stuffed chicken wings are a thing, and they're amazing. Have you come across the stuffed chicken wing? Apparently, you take the bones out, you stuff it with something delicious, and then you fry them.
Mm.
I've only had everyone it behind me is like,
I've only had it in the Thai restaurant.
Everybody's like, yeah,
Thai
that
restaurant.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
The audience is in.
I've only had it in the Thai restaurant. They're fine.
They're fine?
But what's wrong with just the chicken wing?
Nothing
there's
is
some
wrong
more,
with the
there's some more
wing.
Of these things that I want to get to next week,
okay.
too, because some of them...
But let's hit it next week.
And a breakfast sandwich. Like, one of the things was, our breakfast sandwiches getting too chefy?
What?
Ooh, we're going to find that out right here with this crowd. We're going to ask that question. After these folks get their fine Dahlia Bakery breakfast sandwich. Okay, it's time for questions from our listeners. We love this segment. If you go to our Facebook page, you're welcome to put a question on there. You might even win something when we do the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, because that's how we determine who wins what here on this show, the prowess at the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia at the end of the show. So up next on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, it's time for questions from our listeners on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's Chef Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And Katie O.
Thank you for listening to us. Hopefully you're in your garden or you're driving, or you could be sitting with these lovely folks right here at the Hot Stove Society and listen to our show live. But if you're not, we're going to ask some questions for you.
That's right. We went to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen. We asked you what was on your mind. We also asked some of our audience members here today if they had questions. So we are going to jump right into our live guest. We've got Debbie. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Come right up to that microphone, Debbie.
Okay.
Just pull it right
there. Debbie from Redmond is what I have down here. Debbie, are you a proficient home cook?
No.
No.
I'm an okay home cook.
I bet your family would disagree with you.
I think you're being modest.
I have lots of cookbooks. I'm a avid cookbook reader.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your favorite cookbook? What's the one that you just...
I brought with me my first edition, Tom Douglas.
Yay!
I'm hoping he'll sign.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Second to Tom's book, since he's here and you have to say that.
I think she has a question for us.
Oh, really? You just want to jump right to that question? No,
I just got one. I can't remember the author. Cast Iron.
Cast Iron.
Cooking. And I love Cast Iron, and so that's my new kind of thing.
Sharon and Julie Kramus did a Cast Iron cookbook.
It might be
maybe
that
it's
one.
Theirs. Yeah.
Very cool. What's your question, Debbie?
Okay. I have heard recently you talk about cooking meat from frozen, and I've done ribeye from frozen, and it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you talk about the duck from frozen.
Mm-hmm.
In my freezer, I often have flank steak, pork loin, other meats frozen. What is the process, or is it okay to cook those from frozen, or do you know you just got
so far, since I've been experimenting with this, you know, Kenji Lopez Alt, I think it's mm-hmm. came out with that book, and that had that information in there, and so far, nothing I've tried is a problem.
Oh.
So with a flank steak, if it's frozen, you know, already with a flank steak, you want to get the fire super hot, because you're going to want a crust before you cook all the way through that thin piece of meat. So that's why you always do flank steak really hot. I would imagine it would be easier with a flank steak than raw, because you can get a little harder sear on the outside, and the inside will stay frozen and rare, right? Mm-hmm. So at some point it's going to thaw all the way through, but I would think frozen on that would be interesting.
Even, yeah, and high even, heat. Yeah, yeah. I would suggest high heat.
The pork loin,
same thing. Yeah. Same thing. So, yeah, it's a fascinating, you know, as chefs, we just for years would never have thought about that. And I often thought, God, you know, you got to pull your steak out of the fridge for a while, let it come almost to room temp, and then you cook. It's nonsense. You don't have to do any of that
right.
stuff.
Yay.
Turns out. So, Debbie, you're all set.
Great. Thank you. Thank
all
you.
Right.
Thanks, Debbie.
Who's next over here?
I think we've got Diane. Is that correct?
Yep.
Hi, Diane. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
What is your question for the chefs?
It's about mussels. So,
oh, I got
like,
plenty
like
of them.
They're, not, the not chefs, those. For those who can't see, they're flexing. They're very, very strong
very
physiques.
Impressive.
Guns,
about to
guns,
rip
baby.
Shirts
these
here.
Cobras are sick.
So I find myself now having access to fresh mussels from the Sound, mm-hmm. and I'd never harvested them before, but looked at YouTube videos, and they emphasized removing the barnacles,
mm-hmm.
and that was not successful. They're covered in barnacles, and we cooked them and ate them anyway. I'm just wondering if that affects the broth, or, you know, is that bad?
If anything, it would affect the broth, right? I don't imagine
it
bad.
It might affect the broth a little bit, but it's not. I mean, I've cooked barnacles on mussels for a long time. You know, when you're in a hurry or whatever, if you don't have time to remove them, it's easy. It's nicer if you remove them for the flavor itself. But overall, no, I don't think it's that bad. You know, you just get a bit deeper brine. To me, I think you get just a bit deeper brine of the, because those things on top are what do you call them? Barnacles. You know, they're a little bit stronger. They're just gummy shellfish.
Yeah, the thing I would say is going to change your mussel structure and flavor the most is where you get them from.
Right.
You want them from a nice, clean, washed area. So by that I mean, like if you go up to Penn Cove and you see all the rafts out in kind of the middle of the bay there, that's deep water. It flushes all the time. And so you're getting a cleaner mussel. Then let's say you're on the docks near the exit of the Duwamish to Elliott Bay, right? You know, so that's a whole different flavor profile and literally chemical profile in the water there.
Right.
So that's just something to be concerned with where you're getting the mussels from.
Okay, mm-hmm. yeah. Okay. Case inlet, I think.
Yeah, I think you're fine.
Pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
They're filtering the water, so those little shellfish.
Yeah, they filter the water, so that's what they do. So.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
All right, up next we have Anna from Polsbo. Hi, Anna.
Hello, Anna.
Hi. Anna.
Hi.
That's a long trip all the way this morning?
Yes, all the way this
wow.
morning.
You're so dedicated.
But as well, we're
thank
glad
you.
We're here. Yes, I'm a working mom, and mm-hmm. I oftentimes use my slow cooker. And do you have any suggestions about cooking chicken breasts without having them dry out and taste like wood chips?
Yeah, cook yes. chicken thighs. Get rid of the
exactly.
breasts.
Exactly, get rid of the breasts,
thighs.
Cook the thighs, or cook the whole chicken.
Are you committed to the breasts? Are you? Do you like the
well,
lean
we're
meat?
A white meat family, yeah.
Yeah,
but
okay. I think that's part of it. So.
So can I just ask that question? Because that's an interesting question. You're obviously, how would I say, your children are white meat because you were white meat, right? So, but how did you get there, and why did you get there? Was it a health thing? Like, were you thinking, like, the dark meat has too much fat, or were you thinking, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I think it started as a health
mm-hmm.
thing and what my husband and I preferred.
Okay. I don't know. I'm a dark chicken person. I'm a thigh meat person.
So one of the ways to get around drying out chicken is to, first of all, go slow. And second of all, try covering it with bacon. You into bacon?
Yes. Bacon makes everything
so
better.
So I was trying to get to that point because you just said you wanted to eat healthy and eat the white. and now you just added bacon. So yeah. I might as well go to the leg.
What, true. You know, here's something that I would say about chicken breast, because I don't personally cook with a slow cooker, so I'm not as familiar with
I don't think any of us really do.
Mechanism, but something kind of along a similar line, if you want to just kind of set it and forget it, would be a sous vide machine. And I've certainly experimented with chicken breast with a sous vide style cooking, and I will say that it keeps it much more juicy and tender. I think there's something about that kind of consistent heat, that low heat that cooks, again, not in a bunch of other stuff, so it's kind of sealing it in. I don't know.
I hear what you're saying, and you're totally correct.
Yeah, like it's,
I just don't think for a family, I don't know, four, we'll just say that it's a reasonable, you know, I'm sure you put that in the slow cooker so that when you get home, you have a dinner ready to go, right?
But that is the same thing you can do with a slow cooker. I mean, you can stick more chicken breasts in a
No, I understand, but you got to do the rest of the service. I mean, I don't know if you have a stew going in that pot or what else is in that pot, but it's supposed to be ease of use by using the slow cooker while you're at work, right? Like a crock pot
And you just make a nice little couscous with your chicken, you know, some beautiful lemon sliced in there, vegetables, everything, you know, chicken stock, and then everything will stay really moist until it's totally cooked all the way, and you'll have a very moist chicken breast.
Okay.
Are you saying, chef, put the couscous in the slow cooker with the chicken breast?
Put the vegetables, the chicken, chicken broth in the slow cooker, and then when you get home, you just cook your couscous. Couscous takes about 3 minutes to cook, or 5 minutes at the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and then you remix the whole thing together, so you'll have this wonderful stew.
Moroccan stew.
Mm-hmm. Put a little spice
in there. A little
harissa. Yeah, Marisa, I wasn't going to say it. I'm glad you did.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Was that helpful?
Yes.
Okay. Up next, it's our favorite Taste of the Week on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rutzer, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
You too could be a member of our fabulous audience if you go to hotstovesociety.com and buy a darn ticket.
That's
for $15.
Right.
Comes with breakfast and hot coffee, and it's a delicious way to spend your Tuesday morning. Our favorite Taste of the Week is coming up, but of course we're going to have the Baker's Corner with Brittany Bartleben. It's a favorite of mine. And then the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia is going to wrap up the show. We're here for one more hour. Please hang with us. Or if you want, you know, you can always podcast our show and take it with you on the road.
That's right.
Or into the garden.
Or the garden, or maybe on your run or walk in the mornings.
I talked to a lady who listens to it every time she takes a plane flight.
Really?
And I said, well, I hope you fly every week. And she does.
Well, isn't that nice for us? We thank you for your listenership.
So, favorite Taste of the Week. I had a very simple one this week, and I just think it's something that we kind of overlook sometimes. So we're making this is the time of year for fresh tomato salad.
Oh, yeah.
And so tomato salad, right, you've got a couple of different varieties of tomatoes. You've got basil. You've got
olive oil,
a little red wine vinegar, salt, black pepper. I put a little anise hyssop in there with the basil and a little tarragon, so it was kind of herby.
Mm-hmm.
And so you eat the tomato salad. Gosh, it's good. I mean, it's really good.
It's really,
really good.
Right? What's left in the bottom of the bowl?
All the best part of the tomato salad.
All the best part, right? The tomatoes have leached out their water, so you have tomato water in the bowl. Mm-hmm. You've got that delicious vinaigrette you made. And I had taken a nice rustic bread loaf. This happened to be the house loaf from the Dahlia Bakery. And I had charcoal grilled it. And then after it came off the grill, I mean, I get crusty on my grill when I do bread. I like that kind of burnt edge. Then I take a raw clove of garlic on that bread, and I'm not putting a lot. I'm just rubbing it on the bread, and you get this amazing little light garlic fragrance
that's
on the bread that's different than, say, chopping the garlic with butter.
Right.
You know, this is a light, but it's so raw and fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You take that grilled piece of bread and put it in the bottom of that bowl with all that vinaigrette and the tomato water. It's just something I thought, God, I bet a lot of people would never even have done that, right? It would just then, that at the end of the day, that would have just gone into down the disposal or something. And it was my favorite bite of the entire meal.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Because I'm French and I eat bread with everything, I never let that juice go away. Well, always soak it up.
My dad always just wanted to kind of soak up the meat juices with a piece of bread.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just thought, wow.
I think that's
a summertime high.
That's what starches are really made for, is just sopping up everything else, honestly. Okay. Whether you're a potato or a piece of bread, that's
absolutely
delicious.
I was just in L.A. and I had a great reminder of pork collar. Sliced super thin, like scallopini size, and pan-fried very simply with lemon juice, fresh herbs. That came to the table with some kind of like charred green beans. They were grilled, basically, and then mixed with toasted almond, fresh herbs as well, and a little bit of lemon. That was very simple and very delicious.
Tell me where the pork collar comes in.
The pork collar comes in as just basically a piece of pork collar than you buy, sliced super thin, and then
I've ever seen pork collar in a normal grocery store.
Huh. Well,
I've eaten it. I've had it at a restaurant, but you're right. I've never seen it.
I don't see it in store either, but I definitely had it, and it was a reminder to me that, you know, you just buy a nice piece of pork from the neck. I mean, the color will be definitely coming
right
from the
skin
neck.
Skin on, though, right?
Skin on. Uh-huh. Just tiny, tiny skin. It's definitely some of the fat has been parred already. And obviously, the skin of the pork has been parred, too. But the meat...
So is it braised up and then pan-fried?
No, no. It's sliced super thin like a scallopini and then pan-fried.
Okay.
I mean, there's no shishi to it. It's just very simple. And I just thought, wow, you know what? It's like... It's summertime because that kind of stuff you can do... With a beautiful salad on the side, you can do, you know, you can put it on top of pasta. You can put it in many different ways. You can slice it super thin and then sprinkle it on top of pasta.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very easy way, and it's very inexpensive meat, you know, but delicious.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever had it, and I would say that if I haven't seen it, I'm 60 years old now. If I haven't seen it, I don't imagine it's available very many places. I want to tell people where to get it.
I know. I'm with you.
You have to work on that, okay?
I'm going to look on that. Okay. I'm going to look on that and like get back to you.
All right.
All right. My taste of the week also skews a little bit porky as well. It's something that we've talked about on the show, but I was really reminded of it this past week as I did not want to cook in my small apartment. That's kind of the theme of my life right now, it seems, because it's a little warm. But I went down to...
Does it get smoky in there? Because it sure gets smoky outside.
Oh, my gosh. It's a challenge. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it that way. But went down to the International District, which is close to my neighborhood, and I took a little trip to Cow Cow, the Chinese barbecue shop, which has been there for a really long time. I know my family's been getting Chinese barbecue there since we've been in Washington State.
Did the guy with the 4-inch whisker help you?
Yes, the neckbeard man, which I feel like he doesn't get enough love. He is, I think, a standard in the food world of Seattle. Like he's just always manning that cutting station.
Mm-hmm. He always, and the big fish in the window.
Yeah,
the
and he always looks like he's kind of grumpy, but if you are kind to him, like anybody else you should be kind to, he just flashes you the sweetest, biggest smile.
Are you talking kind like hi mister, or talking
like,
kind like a little $20 bill in the tip jar?
No, just like you thank him for being there as you would for anybody else, which kind of seems like a neglect when I watch other customers come in, but you know, you thank him for giving you the cuts.
He's pretty gruff. He reaps what he sows, I think.
He's pretty gruff, but if you say thank you, he'll flash you one of the sweetest
smiles.
Or
it could be that when KDO says
thank you. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm very appreciative.
Says thank you. I don't quite get the same wink and smile back.
When Tom says thank you, he just takes a cleaver and hit it one more time.
Yeah, exactly.
More importantly, with the
buries it in the board.
With the taste of the week is that you can get obviously delicious roasted duck there, and their chashu is really good. But I love that side pork. It is so crackling crispy on the outside. It's always got that nice layer of fat and meat, and I always love to buy extra because it makes for great fixings for fried rice. Or for additions into your soups. It's really worth it, in my opinion, to travel down there and get it every now and again and just stock your fridge.
I know the couple of weeks ago I told you about the burn-ends. Tuesdays and Fridays they have the burn-ends at Cow Cow. And I buy it by the pound, and then I'll eat 3/4 of a pound of it.
On the car ride home.
On the car ride home. That's right. Sometimes I actually have enough left over to put in the freezer. And so last night, you just mentioned the fried rice. We made fried rice with barbecue pork ends.
It is
shrimp,
so delicious.
Shrimp, octopus.
Yes.
Veggies.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
It's almost like a Chinese barbecue.
It's almost like a paella.
It's good fun. Up next, Tyotin Farm Creamery is joining us. I see a nice little plate and some boards of cheese going around. Yum. Can't wait on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show at the Hot Stove Society. Everyone's got a mouthful of a Dahlia Bakery breakfast sandwich. Hopefully they're all delicious with our house mustard that we make.
It's delicious.
Speaking of which, I was at the Shoreline Central Market yesterday, and they had my mustards on sale for $3.99. That's cheap.
That's a screaming deal.
That's a full bus. Let's see. I'm trying to think what I paid for it. Like $3.98. So... No, I was shocked. They were really a good price. So that would be Ballard Market, Milk Creek, Shoreline Central, and the Paulsbow Central Market. Mm-hmm. So
very nice. Very nice.
$3.99. Got to love it.
Wow.
Tyotin Farm Creamery. Laurie is here. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. You did great so far. That's fantastic. She's a bit shy. But, you know, you have something in your teeth. Oh, no, just kidding. Nobody can see you on the radio. Just joking. She was so concerned about having some breakfast.
Don't let him get to you, Lori.
You have the most beautiful cheese here. You brought us an entire cheese board. What do you guys think of that board that she sent down? Pretty darn delicious, huh? One of the benefits of when you come to the live show in the audience, you often get a little taste of what our guests bring along. So there's another reason to come see us and celebrate the show with us every week.
Sometimes it's Doritos. Sometimes it's beautiful homemade cheese.
Yes, indeed. So tell us about your farm, where it is, and what you're doing. I see these gorgeous soil samples. You brought us. We're going to put this on our Facebook page, but you brought us two soils. One when you bought the farm 10 years ago, and which I feel like I just bought the farm up this last birthday. And then what the soil looks like now, which is very interesting. So tell us about you and where you come from and why you're doing this.
Well, I'm so honored to be here. Thank you both for letting me be here.
Absolutely.
And the conversation you had earlier, this is organic and how to produce food ethically, is a subject I've devoted my entire life to. We, my partner Ruth Babcock and I, bought the farm in the year 2008, and it was in the Natchez, Tyotin area where we have granite, maybe basalt sort of bedrock. So, Tom, you're kind of familiar with what that means. And it was farmed probably for fruit production with all the chemicals and what is entailed with all that spraying. You spoke about that earlier. But the farm we bought had laid empty for 7 years, so we had a really good base to work with. But you can see the soil is very, very dry and very, very fine.
No love in there.
Right. So this is what animals do on a farm. They live, they breathe, they eat, they poop, they make manure. There are no manure problems on a sustainable farm. We don't have that issue because that's solid gold to soil production. So I often think of what we do as soil managers more than anything else. Of course, at Tyotin Farm and Creamery, we focus on cheese making. That's really the biggest thing that we do there. But taking care of the animals, making sure that they're on pasture, and it's not just goats, dairy goats and sheep, but we have cattle that we run on the farm. We have turkeys, ducks, geese. There is no monocropping philosophy here. We also raise vegetables. So some of the stuff I brought for the smoked goat tacos, everything came from the farm. Everything came from this soil. The idea is to make food the way it should be made without the use of chemical fertilizers, pesticides, and fighting with nature. I mean, obviously, what enhances soil is the cycle of life, and the cycle of life includes the cycle of death, and that is what builds up soil and gives it the nutrients that we need to grow our next crop, our next generation, our future. So instead of depleting the soil every year, which is a product of industrial farming.
See it all over the valley.
Especially dairies have a lot to answer for this process. Right. we are building the soil every year. And yes, we produce a lot of protein, and maybe none of us need to eat as much protein as we've eaten in years past, but that's okay too. We can grow a lot of food on a small piece of land. We can take good care of animals.
So you just have to manage it correctly.
Exactly.
And that takes work.
It does. We move the animals a lot. We use intensive management grazing, mm-hmm. which means they are moved maybe every other day when the grass is really growing,
right.
so that they are always eating it down to a certain level. And then the poultry kind of come in and they break up all the manure, and this is the process and the cycle right. we use. The cheese making brings whey to the table, whey from the cheese production, and we feed that directly to the pigs that we raise that also dig and root and start to really build the soil. It'll look brown at the end of the year wherever the pigs had gone, but that following year it grows the most beautiful green clover grasses that you can possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It's very lush and delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And like Tom said, we'll post pictures on our Facebook page of the soil, but if you look at one, it almost looks kind of dusty and ashy, like there's really not much going on in there. And then the next jar next to it really looks like it's got some life to it. It looks a little bit more moist. It's dark. It's almost the color of ground up Oreos in a funny way.
Mm-hmm.
But Lori, you and your partner Ruth, did you meet doing software? And like, that's such a big choice. I think so many of us on this side of the mountain range really think of our lives as these really traditional jobs and careers. And moving to Tyotin and creating a farm is no small task. So what was the first thing on your mind? Was it to make cheese? Was it to do the sustainable thing altogether? I mean, it's a really big undertaking.
Well, I think for Ruth and I, food was always a very big part of our lives, and we enjoyed growing whatever we could.
Mm-hmm.
In Seattle, you have a great climate. You can grow a lot of things in your backyard,
mm-hmm.
and you can even raise a few chickens now without any problems.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on and we were sitting behind desks working, we realized that we wanted to become part of the solution for food production instead of just being the consumer that maybe is really part of the problem.
Right.
And it kind of grew. We had a piece of property that we farmed for a cousin in Bellevue, and we raised vegetables there so that we would learn whether we could really do this. Could we really stand this lifestyle farming? But all we did was fall more and more in love with it.
Yeah. It's a commitment.
It is very much of a commitment. Congratulations.
But we can tell
so
the love
back,
in it.
Go back to that for 1 second about the consumer, though. That's interesting to me. You know, we're part of this group now. Kurt Dammeyer started called Sound Food Uprising.
Nice.
Did you look into that at all? Have you heard about that?
Not very much, no.
Well, it's really about presenting the issues to the consumer and having the consumer be educated enough and willing to make the choice for a different food palette.
Nice.
Something that is sustainable in our area and also it eliminates adding pesticides to the earth and that sort of thing. So it sounds like you're doing that in such an organic way over there, no pun intended. But I think that's beautiful. And when I watch the chickens roost around or, you know, dig around for bugs in our yards and things like that, it is an amazing cycle of life.
Of course.
That's happening.
And everybody has a job.
I drove by these pigs in a sty. We were going to a farm stand, and they had pigs across the way in a sty. And it's like, you can barely see it. It's like just his ear and the top of his snout so he could breathe was out of the mud water, you know. It was so cool. But I didn't even think about how he's rooting in there and how that's churning the soil and at the same time. So,
right.
Lori, we're going to keep you for one more segment and so that we can talk about all this beautiful cheese that you brought and how you got to love these certain styles of cheese. On Cairo Radio, we'll be right back on 97.3 FM. All right, we're back in the Seattle kitchen. Chef in the Chapeau, our audience motivator, Katie O. You're still eating that little bit of burger that you had, the lamb burger. What'd you think of that?
I thought it was so delicious, actually. It's nice to have a little savory patty in the morning.
Yeah. We're here with Lori from Tyotin Farm and Creamery. We just learned about the soil of the farm and how do you keep that healthy. the importance of that as far as to where we're going next, which is at the end of the day, I just have to describe them as the most delicious little goat and sheep's milk cheeses. They're so fresh and delicate. What do you think, Chef, of the cheese?
I think it's astonishing, delicate flavor. I mean, it's really nice, very distinguished between each one of them. They're very different. You do a marvelous job.
I was going to say, that was the thing that really impressed me, is that all of them were so delicious, but also so distinct, and right. All from one producer, which is
exactly.
Tiatine Creamery. I mean, it's really a marvel, frankly.
So, Lori, I don't know if you know this or not, but early on in my career, a couple from Edmonds, Jacques and Marie Jobert. Marie was a Holocaust survivor, and Jacques was one of the guys who found her in the French resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up getting married, and they lived in Edmonds, Washington, and made us goat cheese every week in their garage. And I would buy... Did you bought from
Jacques? Yeah, of course.
I would buy about 100 wheels a week, the little 3.5-ounce wheels. And when he was ready to retire, he taught us how to make this cheese. And so Stephen, in the basement of the palace, would make his little fresh fromage blanc, which is that one in the center,
fresh curd,
kind of,
yeah.
Right, if I'm not mistaken. And we would make our own goat cheese every week at the palace. And then we lost our supplier of milk. So sad. They decided they were going to make their own cheese.
Right.
So tell us what you brought here and what kind of milk this is, and go through the cheese, if you would.
Right. I think the very fresh one you're speaking about, all of our cheeses are named after our animals, so that's why you probably don't recognize the names. But Bianca is a beautiful white goat, and we take the milk, and within 4 days, it's chef's
a fresh
stuff.
Chef.
Yeah, very, very fresh.
So, very typical French, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Very,
Which, of course, is the heart and soul of cheese. That cheese, I just think it shows off our milk profile.
Mm-hmm.
So I always like to showcase that.
And so your goats are eating what for that profile?
They are eating, well, whatever is fresh in the pasture at that time. So as the season progresses, you know, they start out with spring grass. It's very, very grassy, and they're eating, you know, still some dried grass that was left over from winter.
Okay.
So then the cheeses change in the summer when they start to get more grass, more fresh grass, and some fresh flowers that are growing in the meadows, and clover and alfalfa and things.
So you can actually tell the difference when they're on the clover and flowers compared to the grass from the spring.
Well, Ruth and I can. We can actually taste it in the milk.
Yeah.
Which then will be always reflected in the cheese.
Right.
Yeah, if you do the milk testing throughout the year, you would see the milk being different for sure.
Okay.
And the fact that we mix the animal milk, so we use goat milk and sheep milk, which have kind of different seasons, like the sheep milk will peak at a little bit earlier in production, and then it gets richer. And as the babies grow, they don't need watery milk. They can digest. So the milk solids go way up.
Right.
So we're still getting a lot of cheese out of the milk. We're just getting less milk.
Mm-hmm.
And the character of it changes and becomes richer. And that I like to put up the hard cheese more in the summer. The volume is very, very high for these animals. They're producing more in the summer than they do on either end of the summer. So that's when I make the raw milk cheeses, like Mona Lisa's, my Pecorino, Caprino Romano, and Calypso is a beer washed. I mean, being in the Yakima Valley, I had to have an homage to a beer washed rind.
That Calypso is so delicious.
Yeah, it's delicious.
That saltiness, and it's very, very good.
Is naming your goats kind of like naming pink chips? Is there like a little science to it? Like Summer Breeze, and it's purple.
You know? Pink chips. Damn.
You know, don't you want to be the person that names all the pink chips?
That's a hard job.
Yeah. But is there like a facial quality that names your goats? Like Mona Lisa is this Pecorino, right?
Right. And
Mona
she's
Lisa.
This beautiful goat that's a light caramel color with white stripes on her face.
Do her eyes follow you everywhere you go?
She looks like she should be painted.
There you go.
She's barely smiling.
She's an enigma.
She's an enigma. That's right. Okay. Okay, so then you have the washed rind in beer. You also have another washed rind, Reba.
Reba is a softer washed rind that is my homage to the great cheese of Reblochon. But Reblochon is usually made with raw milk and cow milk. And I obviously am pasteurizing using goat and sheep. And which I think I actually like better now that I've done that. But then I have another. I have two bloomy rinds on there. One is Sonnet, which is aged about 8 days to 2 weeks. And it sort of has the white cultures in it that are in a blue cheese, but not the blue culture. So that's what makes it softer and more delicate. And
so is Sonnet. Sonnet is right up there next to the Bianca, the 4-day fresh, and then the Sonnet is an 8-day fresh. So is that the same cheese, just aged longer?
No, it's not. It has different cultures in it. So I do use different cultures and different aging processes.
All right.
Yeah. Velvet was the other final bloomy rind that was in the mix, and that was my attempt to make an Epoisse-style cheese that I washed with pear brandy from Clear Creek Distillery in Oregon.
You just need to have it age longer.
You think so?
So it stinks up a little bit more.
Well, it's so hard to package as it is. I'm not sure how to do it.
Epoisse is a cheese, and when it's in the house, you know it's in the house.
You do know. It's so true.
When it's ripe
so good.
In the house.
Oh, yeah, when it's ripe.
That or Mont d'Or.
And what's funny about Epoisse is the inside doesn't smell anything like the outside. It's just the rind that's super powerful.
And it doesn't taste super powerful. It's just
It's delicious. It's creamy and
that odor is odorific. Yeah. So where do people buy your cheese? So you must sell it at farmers markets?
Mostly at farmers markets directly from me. Mm-hmm. We go to the University District Farmers Market. We do the Queen Anne Farmers Market. We also have been at Mercer Island Farmers Markets. I do the downtown Yakima Farmers Market. Besides that, PCC Natural Markets, which was natural for us to be linked up with them, as well as Madison Market, Central Co-op on Madison. Mm-hmm. Those are right now, Whole Foods is kind of hit and miss. They're a little bit different format for their cheese counter and how they do things.
Mm-hmm. Especially lately, right? They're going through tons of change. Yeah.
And we're really small producers, so our biggest issue with all of them is distribution.
Right.
I mean, we do not go into distribution.
And availability, which is a really true thing that you never see in the big factory cheese made. They don't have issues of, this week the cow didn't produce as much milk, so they don't have that issue for some reason.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because it upsets me so much to go into, especially the whole food, natural food places that will actually have my cheeses lined up to something that was squeezed out of a tube in Wisconsin. And, those commercially produced cheeses from confined animals should not even really be there as far as I'm concerned. Right. And they cannot stand up to the quality. They cannot have the flavor profile, but they can be $14 a pound.
Right.
They're super cheap.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
which is also another thing that people should know. When you go to the store and you buy local cheeses, I mean, you can find French cheeses on the market that are half the price of the local cheese. To me, it's mind-boggling because I don't understand how that works.
Well, I can.
But
tell
I do
you
know
bit.
That the local farmers who make cheese, they're not becoming millionaires.
No, they are not. We have to own the land in this country. We have to pay the taxes on the land. We have to grow the grasses. I mean, most cheese makers are buying their milk and shipping it, and that's what I mean about not having a carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. We are truly farmstead. We have a small herd, and the milk travels 200 yards to be made into cheese. It's not pumped
from
the field.
You're making the complete circle of life.
Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Tell us about the little lamb burger that you brought for us.
The little lamb burger, we just started a USDA program where we do have the capability to do cuts so that we can bring that to farmer markets as well. But all of our lambs that are in the program are raised on the farm. Same with goats. We can do USDA goat cuts now, too. And they are pastured animals. I think when they're babies, Ruth has to give them a little bit of grain for their health. But all of our grain is non-GMO, and we get it as fresh as we can. We do have some of that delivered to the farm.
Mm-hmm. Well, so delicious. I don't think we're not prone to hyperbole around here, especially me. I know Terry loves everything, like Dick's Burgers and Cheetos. But me, I'm more selective in
You're
my
more
taste.
Distinguished.
I would say these cheeses, quite delicious.
Yeah,
I mean, really kind of eye-opening.
Right, and worth really seeking out. Again, you're not going to become a millionaire, as you know, Lori, making cheese. But it's a craft, and it's an art. And I think that's
something dedication.
As a bunch of food lovers, we should continue to support this particular type of craft and art and really seek it out.
So the name is Tieton Farm and Creamery, T-I-E-T-O-N, Farm and Creamery. She's at, as you heard, several farmers markets in the Seattle area. Also PCC and then the Central Market.
I'm pretty sure you have a website.
Yes, we do.
Is it under Tieton Farm?
Yes, at Tieton Farm and Creamery with the ampersand.
Good. Yeah. And then if I were you, I would start a mail order program because our radio listeners are far and wide.
Nice.
So maybe
and very wise.
and very wise. Up next is Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Thank you for coming out and sharing your products with us, Lori.
Thank you.
We are going to, I think, take Katie on today, if I'm not mistaken. That wasn't the case earlier because we bumped Brittany, the baker's corner, but we're going to take Katie on and smash her.
Okay.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. You are back in the Seattle kitchen at the Hot Stove Society on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Thanks for hanging with us. We're here every Saturday and Sunday with a live audience, as you can hear. We're 4 to 6 on Saturdays, 10 to 12 on Sundays in the morning, and then again on special Sundays, we're again on 5 o'clock. So, Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Tina is going to be our administrator today.
She's
kind of got the principal look going on.
Yep, very serious today in the food quiz, you three. Well, here's how it works, you guys. Each one of you will get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. But whoever gets the least correct is the loser.
That's
and that
right.
loser has to give something away to somebody who is a big fan of our show. Today you're playing for Debbie, who wrote us the sweetest letter.
We are going to play for you, Debbie, as well as Anna from Polsbo, who also had a really great question that kind of stumped us, I would say, a little bit.
And, of course, Diane. Diane was up here, too. We can't leave Diane out.
Okay, we're playing
for 3
people.
So today we're doing 3 times the prizes.
All right. So, Katie, should you lose the quiz today, what would you give to our 3 lovely...
The 3 listeners will get a little gift package from Molly Moon's homemade ice cream. So we will give them a gift card, some sprinkles, and maybe even a cute little Molly Moon shirt.
Wow, lovely. Nice.
Beautiful. Chef Jerry Retro, what would you give away times 3 today?
I want to invite those 3 musketeers to look for brunch on the Saturday or Sunday. So each one of them get 2.
Nice.
So that would be 6 all day.
Wow. It's a big day here at Seattle Kitchen.
Man,
Chef Tom Douglas.
It is. I am going to give away 3 dinners for 2 at the Palace Kitchen.
Oh, nice. My God.
So that's 1 for each person. And here's the thing. Lori was so awesome with Diatin Farm Creamery. I'm giving her a dinner for 2 at the Palace Kitchen.
And you get
also.
A car.
And you get a car.
Look under your seat. Look under your seat.
Lori and Ruth definitely need to come to the city and have a little night out on
that
the town.
Right.
That farming is hard work.
Yes. All right. Lori and Ruth.
All right, let's get this party started. Who would like to go first?
I'll start.
All right, Chef Thierry Rotereau, what fruit with a large pit and green flesh was once known as an alligator pear?
Avocado?
Yes. Sharp.
Famous for its $15 toast.
Chef Thierry, true or false, is it advisable to keep fish on ice even when it is in the refrigerator to help maintain its quality? Is that true or false?
I'm going to go with true on that.
Correct. Do you do that?
You know, there is a few tricks to that. If it's a fillet of fish, no skin and not wrapped, you don't want to bury it in ice because the ice will burn the meat of the fish. However, if you have skin on or whole fish, absolutely bury it in ice.
Just put a piece of saran wrap or
yeah, just put some
down.
Saran wrap. Just put some newspaper or something in between the fish and the ice. It's extremely important to know that the meat of the fish is very sensitive. So,
Chef, why do marinades tenderize meat? Is it because sugars and salt bond to tissues? It rehydrates cells. Soaking causes demyelination. Or D, acids chemically weaken connective tissues.
The acid tenderize.
It's actually
last
the one.
One
I mispronounced.
Was that, before. Was that 4 or was that 3?
Soaking causes demyelination.
Demyelination.
What is that? Anyone?
It's a word that most people use to break down muscles and
it's what happens at the end of a treaty, of a nuclear treaty.
That's exactly what it is. Thank you,
got
Tom.
It, Tom.
Thank you, Chef. All right, Chef, question number 4 for you. True or false, putting a banana in a closed paper bag with an unripe avocado will speed the ripening of the avocado. That's a fun little hack, isn't it?
Wait a minute. The avocado
sounds
is the one
like
getting ripe.
Put a banana in a closed paper bag with an unripe avocado. Will
no,
that speed up the ripening?
This show does have to fit 2 hours
yes.
time frame.
It is true.
That is true. Correct. All right. Which measurement is larger, a pinch or a dash? If you could see Thierry's face right now.
A pinch. Oh, I'm going to go with the pinch bit bigger.
Unfortunately, a dash is larger. Sorry. That was 3 out of 5, though, and 2 really difficult questions. So I think that's a fair showing.
You're saying I suck, right?
That's a fair showing.
No, I think she says you're right on.
I think you're spot on. All right, Katie, are you ready?
Yep.
In what southern hemisphere country is the kiwi fruit mainly cultivated?
Oh, I would think Australia?
Ooh. She said, what part of the hemisphere, right?
Answer's New Zealand,
New Zealand,
Katie.
You're down in of course it is, because that's what we call New Zealanders.
Kiwis.
Yes, Kiwis. Oh, duh. Okay.
Question number 2. Which type of milk has the most fat, cow, goat, or sheep?
Ooh. I want to look at Lori Babcock. Yes. Where did she go? Sheep.
Sheep is the answer.
I'd feel pretty sheepish if I stooped to that line.
I don't. I feel really good about it.
That's a very sheep shot.
I do like that she did a little hoof motion.
Yeah.
She said sheep.
All right, Katie, question number 3. A red wine with aromas of black currants, green pepper, chocolate mint, leather, and jammy fruit is probably a what?
Is this
Cabernet, Pinot Noir, Chianti, or Beaujolais Nouveau?
Is this the cabs? That we talked about last week.
Good job. You learn on this show.
I learned something.
That's how it works.
That's right.
Katie, the name of the coffee drink cappuccino derives from what? A species of monkey? Color of earth at Kupala? Famous barista named Capo de Chino? Or Capucine monk's brown habit?
Well, I know that there is a monkey called a cappuccino. Which makes me think that that is the answer. But I don't know if that monkey is named after a monk.
I think that was the answer. Okay, let's just say.
Let's just say it's a monkey.
It's actually the monk's brown habit.
The monks.
Darn it.
But you know what? That was pretty good because nobody knew there was a monk.
There is
a monkey
in Costa Rica called a cappuccino.
What is the name of the cone-shaped sieve with holes so small that food must be pressed through it with a spoon or other tool?
China cap or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Or whatever.
Whatever. Is that catch-all?
You have tied with Chef Thierry.
Okay.
With 3 correct answers. Chef, a pro chef asks you to season the dish. What do you do? Salt and pepper to taste, add smoky bacon, stir while adding butter, or sprinkle with essence?
Sprinkle with
always pepper. Sprinkle with emerald essence. Salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper. Correct. Good job. True or false, dark meat generally contains more iron than light meat.
Absolutely.
That is true. 2 for 2. 2 for 2. What's the main purpose of a chafing dish?
To keep things warm.
Yep. Wow. 3 for 3. Boy, oh boy. What spice gives American-style mustard its yellow color?
Well, I know turmeric gives a lot of things yellow. I just don't know if that's the same as American-style mustard. I'm going to go turmeric.
Correct. The name of the high heat brick and clay oven traditionally used in Indian cooking? That's too easy. Let me give you a
tandoori.
No.
It's over. We're done. 5 for 5.
5 for 5.
Yay!
That means
so who wins what?
Well, it's a 2-way tie between Katie and Thierry. Should we do 1 quick question?
Okay.
Sure. Yep.
What is the term for the method of preserving meat by encasing it in its own fat?
Confit.
No, she got it first.
Oh, sorry.
Confit.
Yeah.
Katie!
It took me so long.
Everybody's going to brunch at Luke. That's a great prize.
Nice job.
Come on down.
If you want to be part of our show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Tina Noah at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Lieberwitz, and Sean, don't call me Del Torre, is on vacation. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.